Hi, this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast called I Want to BA. The reason for this podcast is that there is a huge lack of careers advice in the UK, and I'm always asked by young people, by parents and by teachers, my views on improving careers advice, and particularly by parents, what should they say to their youngster who's leaving school. I think it is a wider subject. It's not just about what job do you want to do, but it is actually about how you want your life to be. And within that, what type of career you want to select. And that career can just be the first stepping stone. Nowadays, individuals have a whole portfolio of careers. The people that I've interviewed, even at the age of 30, have had four or five careers. Myself, I've had at least five different types of careers. So this podcast is about firstly talking about careers in general and careers advice, but secondly, bringing in individuals who have experienced careers in particular industries, hence the subject I Want to BA, and they can come and talk about the path that they took to actually get to where they are and also talk about what it's like to actually do that job and have that career. So we'll be covering every type of career that we can think of in the UK, and it will be everything from architects to zoologists. So I look forward to comments, and we'll build things up as we go along, and hopefully it should be of great use to parents, to teachers and to young people. So today's podcast number 47 is a bit different because it's a compilation. This one is a compilation of different journeys. What I realise as I interview people is that very rarely is a journey from school to where that person is now very straightforward. Nearly always they've done a number of things beforehand, and so I thought it'd be a great idea to put together a compilation so that people can see that, you know, there is very rarely a straight path. And I think sometimes when people are trying to get to that end goal, they can get disheartened when they can't immediately get to their target. But what you'll see with all of these journeys is that that very rarely happens. And so bear with it. Take that first step on the ladder, whatever that ladder is. It might be slightly the wrong ladder for you, but take that first step. And what you'll see is when you do that, as these people did, inevitably you start to get closer and closer to your target until you get there. So enjoy.
I did television and video production, BA honours at Bournemouth University.
And again, you know, you were carrying with you still that really clear goal of being a filmmaker, were you?
Always. That never went away. A lot of us went out there and found it really quite hard to get a job, and I was one of them. And so after 6 months of not being employed, I decided I just needed to take any job just to get me to London, just so that I'm in the thick of it. And that turned out to be for a food and drink marketing company. But what I didn't realize was that I was going to be being dressed as a giant raspberry, okay, sampling food and drink.
Right. So tell us about that role, and how did you move from that role as a giant raspberry?
Yeah. So I turned up to work, and there I was in this 4 foot wide costume with my head sticking out the top. It was the most humiliating 3 days of my life.
Yeah.
What I did notice was in the office, they had a design department and a video camera sat there. So I said to the guy just who ran the company out of sheer desperation, let me take that camera home for the weekend and show you what I can do, how I can be better value for you as a member of staff. And so I did that, made this little video. They loved it. I spent the next 18 months creating all of their in-house videos and became their still photographer for some of their large brands.
Going right back to the beginning, I sort of worked out I wanted to work in radio when I was doing my undergrad degree at the University of Lancaster. So I did English Lit there, and I sort of in my mind kind of had formulated a plan of being a journalist, but being a print journalist is hard work, mm-hmm. I found out. So I did a lot of student radio. Lancaster had a really good student radio station, so I sort of mucked in there a bit and sort of thought, well, maybe this will be a career. And then I left Lancaster and moved home for a couple of years and worked in a call centre. Did a lot of work experience spots on like Absolute Radio and Global, so LBC and places like that. Mm-hmm. And thought, yeah, this is what I want to do for a career. And I applied to get a place on the master's course at Goldsmiths, the radio course there. So I eventually got a spot there.
Right.
Moved to London, all bright-eyed and fresh-faced. And did a year there, and it was the best year of my life. I had such a good time. And I was really lucky to get an internship straight off the back of that at a company called IMG,
yeah,
who are, they do a lot of different things as a company. One of their kind of main things is a sports media company, and they've got a little radio department based in London. And then IMG let me know that they were looking for an assistant producer in their radio department and asked me if I'd apply, and I applied and I got the job. So I spent 2 years there, and that was a lot of what I was doing before when I was freelancing there, so working on their football coverage and cutting clips again. And we also worked on a lot of golf, so a weekly golf podcast for the European Tour, and then working on events, so did a Ryder Cup, did a couple of Opens.
I graduated in 2010. I didn't really know what to do, and my parents said, start with something that you like doing. And I loved cooking. It's still a passion. One of my favourite things to do is spend a day off creating a dinner party and seeing friends and feeding people. Yeah. At the time, my mum suggested 3 months at the Ballymaloe Cookery School, which is world-renowned, run by Doreena Allen and her brother Rory O'Connell, who are real pioneers in the food world. They've achieved all kinds of things, and they're really inspiring people to spend time with. So I spent 3 months there. It was really fantastic. It opened all kinds of doors. I met all kinds of interesting people. And when I came back, I thought, perhaps I'll do something in food. So I spent a little bit of time doing some work experience with quite a well-known Irish chef in his restaurant. It was great when I came straight from cookery school, and he asked would I like to come back when they reopened after Christmas. I spent a couple of weeks dreading it, and I didn't really know why. And I went back and I really didn't like it. They were so kind to me. They couldn't have been nicer. But I just knew that it wasn't for me.
For you.
In between university and doing the cookery course, I had worked for my dad. I come from a long line of jewellers. We have a family business in Northern Ireland. I'm fifth generation. And I had spent 4 months in between. He had a few people on maternity leave and asked would I like a job. I said, yes, please. Oh, I was 23. And my mum said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to go back and work for dad. And she said, OK. And a couple of weeks later, I went with my dad to Baal Watch and Jewellery Fair, which happens in March every year. And it's where watch companies and jewellery companies will preview their new collections. It's a really big deal. It's pretty mind-blowing. I loved it, and I came back and my dad said, right, well, if you're serious, you need to do some qualifications. So I looked up the options, and I ended up studying at the British Institute of Gemology. I did a qualification called the FGA, which is a gemology qualification. So you study gemstones and diamonds, and it was pretty science-based, not what I'm usually good at. So it was I did it in a year, and I worked part-time alongside. Afterwards, again, I sort of reached an impasse of, well, what am I going to do now? So my dad had spent some time working at Boodles when he was 17, and I made a phone call to Nicholas Wainwright, who's our chairman, and I was terrified. It was the first sort of professional phone call I'd ever made. I was sort of quaking in my boots, and he said, yep, we'll meet for a coffee. So we did, and he said, right, well, when can you start? We'll give you some work experience. I thought, right, okay, well, should I quit my current job? And he said yes, and I said okay, and I started a couple of weeks later. I spent a little bit of time in Harrods, which was fantastic. I mean, there's nowhere better than Harrods to cut your teeth. You're surrounded by, you know, 30 or 40 of the world's best jewellers. And then I worked for a little bit of time in Sloane Street. I worked at the Royal Exchange. And then I moved back to Harrods again when the store got a little bit bigger. So I sort of got a bump up the ladder about a year in, which was great.
Well, careers advice in schools hasn't really progressed much. I came in one day and I had started A-levels, and the French teacher was also our careers advisor. And he just literally pointed at four of us and said, right, you, go down to Midland Bank at Plumstead. They've got an open day for people to work in the bank. And we said we'd send four. And I was chosen. And I found myself wandering around this bank branch in Plumstead. And 3 weeks later, I started at Midland Bank Woolwich. Well, I went through the whole gambit of branch banking, you know, cashing checks and how do you want the money and everything, like foreign work, foreign exchange and all this. But I'd always had that sort of outgoing thing, and I was brought into a new role called business development. Banks only really started really waking up to marketing in the early 80s, in the marketing that we and you and I would relate to now. Yeah. And so I got appointed this job, and it brought me into marketing 12 branches, and then they selected me to run a brand new job called sales training officer and teach bank clerks how to be salespeople. I reached out to famous organizations to help promote bank, the Midland Bank at that time, and one of those was Charlton Athletic, and I became quite well known to the staff at Charlton. There were only eight of them at that time, and then one day I came home from work and got a phone call from then club secretary saying, we need a commercial manager, and I've told the chairman it should be you.
And this brought you to the attention of the Football League?
Football League. And this was pre-Premier League. So the Football League were all powerful in those days. And the Football League were then divisions 1, 2, 3 and 4. And they just came and asked me to join them. Literally said, we need a commercial manager who understands the clubs. And that's you. So come and join us. So I found myself giving up Charlton.
So you were there for 8 years, and during which, tell us a bit about
that. Well, after the Football League had been going for just over 100 years, and I joined it, and then it started to split up, and people started to blame me. Because I joined in January in 91. In March 91, the first meetings of what became the Premier League started to happen. And in August 92, the Premier League started. So basically, the top clubs left the Football League and left the Football League to their own devices. And I and two or three other colleagues had to pick up the pieces. Mm. And that meant we had to prove that the Football League was a vehicle for sponsorship.
So I actually didn't get into my first choice university. I got into my second choice, which was the University of East Anglia, which is in Norwich, which is in East Midlands. And it was only really my second year when I started to think, okay, like, what do I enjoy doing? What am I going to be doing after my third year is up? And then what ultimately am I going to be doing for, well, I thought this back then, I don't think it now. What am I going to be doing for the rest of my life? And I kind of realized that I started finding the gym aspect of my life more kind of enjoyable than the academic side.
Right.
So I'd have, you know, a way better time going to the gym, learning about nutrition, figuring out what diet kind of works kind of thing, than, you know, looking up about, you know, modern history or whatever. So I had to think about how can I make that into a career? Towards the end of my second year, I got my level 3 diploma in personal training, which is a qualification that you need in order to become a personal trainer. My third year, I kind of started to draft up some, you know, very vague plans of what I was going to do when I finished my degree. Mm-hmm. And I stumbled across a gym, funnily enough, in Sydney in Australia, so other side of the world. I can't specifically remember how I kind of came across it. I think it was via social media.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, it really appealed to me. Like, it, you know, it struck a chord inside me. And I applied to get a job there. And they kind of very politely turned me down just because, you know, there are some visa restrictions with UK residents going over there and stuff. But I still had that idea of going to Australia and Sydney in my head. And so when I left university and got my 2-1, I still went straight over there because I thought, you know, I can go and knock on the door of the gym that just kind of effectively turned me down. And worst case scenario, if they say no again, you know, there's loads of other gyms around there, so I'm sure I'll be able to get a job. When I was researching for jobs in Sydney, an advertisement came up for that same gym. And so I emailed the guy. I said, look, I'm in, you know, Sydney. I've come over from London. Can you see me? And, you know, he pretty much said, yes, set me up with an interview. And there were 3 interviews that I had to attend. And I, you know, jumped through each one of those hoops. So I tried to, you know, over prepare for those interviews, and I eventually, you know, got the personal training job, which is my first job.
Well, started off at grammar school in Essex, did my O levels as they were there now, GCSEs through to A levels. Wanted to go to university, but equally always had an interest in politics, something that I had from a very early age. My dad was a local government officer, and I think that exposed me to politicians, to politics, to current affairs, all that sense of public service. And that, I think, did rub off on me and engendered this real interest, not just in politics, but also wanting to serve. And if the chance worked out, for me to become an MP, standing up for a community, standing up for a constituency, and really making that difference. I was interested in law because, I suppose, maybe because of my political interest in understanding how the law works, making law, and equally that ability to argue a point of view in support of someone that you might be representing. And so it was something that innately I had an interest in when I was at school, thinking that this was what I'd enjoy, that I think would reflect my own skills, my own abilities. And so, yes, went on to study law at Exeter University. Well, first of all, there's a process within each political party to get nominated onto a list of candidates. And then there's almost like a job process to get selected in each individual constituency. So whilst I was doing all of my career and work in the law, I'd been working as a volunteer within and the voluntary party, the voluntary side of the Conservative Party over many, many years, but decided that I wanted to go on to the list of approved candidates to then take that next step of standing for office.
So the subjects I loved at school were science and maths, absolutely loved them, and food technology. And so as soon as I'd identified what I loved to do at school, probably around age 13, I figured out my three passions were science, were people, and food. So I wanted to live a life in a career that would provide me with those three passions. And so that's something I would say to you guys, is that if you are wondering what it is you want to do in life, actually just figure out what it is you love to do. Because when you spend your time doing something you love to do, your career is just going to be phenomenal. I figured out what qualifications I needed. I did it backwards. I looked at what degree I needed, where I would need to go. Then I looked at, in order to apply for that degree, what A-levels I would need. And then in order for me to do those A-levels, I looked at what GCSEs I'd need. So I then went and got a job in Bolton. And basically, when you become a dietitian, you can actually go into any field in the medical world. So you can initially, you start off and you do a job that is a general job, so you cover all sorts of clinical areas, and then you can go into your speciality. So for me, I went into neurology, but for other people, you can go into heart disease, you can go into diabetes, cancer. The range is huge, so it's really about what you're interested in, what opportunities come your way.
So when I was at school, I loved writing. I was an early reader. My dad taught me to read at 3 years old. And when I got to school, I was reading and writing, and a lot of the kids were learning to read. So I got to go off to one side and write my little books, and the teacher would staple them together and let me read them to the class. I got a kick out of it.
Lovely.
So yeah, I always had my little stories, and I always wrote, decided I wanted to be a writer. Won a few prizes and things like that, wrote poems, wrote short stories, always wanted to write a full-length book. But then I was told that that wasn't a really great career and I wouldn't make any money and I should do something more sensible. So I didn't go into it straight away. I actually went and studied linguistics at university, and that was very enjoyable. But the moment I finished, I decided I didn't want to work in that field. So I went into something completely different, went into sales, and started working on my MBA, and decided that business was where it was at. So the first book was almost an accident as well. What happened was, a friend of mine, he had a really rough time. He developed epilepsy. It was not controlled very well. He had a very hard time with it, and he got depressed, and he took his own life. And that really threw me. We were both in our 20s. It was just so unfair. I was angry. I was upset. I had all these emotions. I didn't really know what to do with it. And I was moving to the UK, so I sort of shoved it under the rug. Within 6 months of moving over to this country, it all came back up, as everything always does. You can't, you know, push things away forever. And I knew I had to write the story. There were people who said, you know, it was a sin to take his life. And I just felt there was nobody to tell his story. And I really wanted to write it. So it was that passion that spurred me on. And I did start writing that. And, you know, I did it part-time. I did it, you know, in between other work. I had some major changes. I moved house twice. And I kept persevering and I kept working on it, sending it out, getting rejections, sending it out again, modifying it, editing it. It took a long while for me to finally see it in print.
And how long did that take?
Well, the whole journey took 10 years, I'm ashamed to say.
I didn't really know where I wanted to go. I think it's common for a lot of people, especially when, you know, when you're young, you don't really know where you want to go, what you want to do as a job. So I chose, at A-level, I chose maths, physics and geography. They're nice broad subjects I enjoyed, subjects I was quite good at. but they didn't close off any doors. I wanted to leave as many avenues open as possible. Mm-hmm. Always knew I wanted to go to university.
And you did this degree in a sort of a form of apprenticeship, really, didn't you? It was called a sandwich course, you were saying.
Correct, yeah. So it was a four-year degree. But for the first 3 years, you did 6 months of university and 6 months working. So you had to go out and find a job either locally or somewhere near the university and basically work. For me, it led to a job. I mean, the second and the third work placement I did with the same firm.
What was that?
It was a mortgage company, a centralised mortgage lender. An accountancy qualification is something that no one can really take away from you. It's something you have, you can always fall back on. And it's also a qualification that just opens up so many doors.
So you set your business up, and I know that was a few years ago. So tell us about your business a little bit now. I mean, how many clients have you got?
We have, so we started in 2008, so we're nearly 10 years old now. Mm-hmm. We look after over 200 clients.
Wow.
Based around the UK, ranging from small businesses to, our largest client we've just taken on turns over £7 million. You know, it's big established companies. We've got a team of 10 people now. And, you know, in our own little way, we're creating a really cool place to work.
Yeah.
And we're just, working with a load of cool clients.
I basically just went and, looked at sort of local firms, went to a recruitment consultant and managed to, get an interview for a job. Was lucky enough to get the job, and it sort of went from there, really.
So I want to talk a minute about that interview, because you got that job, and at the time, as you say, it was sort of any job. You weren't sort of picky about what job it was going to be because you weren't sure what you wanted to do. But you got this job, and I'm fascinated when you told me about the interview process. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I got this job. I got the interview for this job, and I went along, and the human resources lady interviewed me. And at the end of the interview, she offered me the job.
And this job was for an accounts clerk?
Yeah, it was, yeah. But it was quite a junior, very junior accounts clerk
job. In a large or small business?
It was sort of medium-sized construction business. At the time, I said to her, thank you very much for giving me the offer, but actually the salary was so low, I couldn't afford to pay rent.
Right.
So she was quite taken aback and sort of said, okay, give me 10 minutes, and rushed off, and then came back and said, actually, there is another role available, but we were looking for somebody, sort of 5 or 6 years older than you. But would you like to apply? So I said, yes, please. So they immediately shuffled me downstairs. I went for an interview with their chief accountant, and he offered me the job.
Wow.
So, which was sort of about 50% more money than the job I'd first gone for.
From sort of 11, 12, 13, I always knew that I wanted to be a journalist, and that was always the answer that I'd give.
Right.
I probably didn't give too much thought about how I'd get there,
yeah.
But I knew that I certainly wanted to write and probably be on a paper. I did some writing for the local paper. I played, I had a sort of interest in sports. I played a bit of table tennis. There was quite a big local league in Folkestone, and I would write reviews for table tennis, which was a very small bit in the local paper, but occasionally you'd see your name in there. And I think that was one of sort of the first big buzzes that I think a lot of journalists get. I did my A-levels, got to university, went off to Leicester University to study English, did a bit of writing for the university newspaper while I was there, which was called The Ripple. Again, it would tend to be sort of music reviews and books and that kind of thing. But being honest, I didn't do a huge amount of that while I was there. I probably didn't see it as a great step on the career ladder. Although looking back, I probably should have done a bit more, and it would have probably helped out.
So you came back from travelling, and then what was the next step? What was your sort of first step on the on the journalistic careers ladder?
So I came back and I was 24 years old, and a lot of my former classmates and former friends at Leicester had been working for 3 years, and I was very conscious that I was 24 and I was a bit behind on the career ladder. And I had gone back to my parents' place in Folkestone and walked into the Folkestone Herald and said to the editor, I know this is what I want to do. She was a woman called Claire Jardine, and she was very forward-thinking and said, I want to take people who are perhaps a little bit older and serious about developing a career here rather than, say, a 16-year-old who's going to come in for a work experience. And which she wasn't against that, but she was keen to get someone a bit older who was certain that this was what they wanted to do. So I started there probably the next day, I think. Wasn't being paid. It was just about getting the experience, seeing if you're a fit in this company and this industry. And it went well. And I knew actually from pretty much the first day that I was surrounded by quite like-minded people. And I just loved the opportunity to write and to find things out.
And then when you got to the end of the internship, what happened then?
So after about 5 weeks, they said, look, a job's come up. We've got the budget for money. We would love to take you on as a reporter, which they did. The money was not great by any means.
Right.
But again, it didn't matter. I actually couldn't believe that someone was going to pay me to do something that I really enjoyed.